I would guess that the biggest word in the word cloud would be shutdown. We have a lot of shutdown resources available at federalnewsradio.com. Just search on shutdown. And for all the people who are talking about it, saying they don't want one to happen, there seems to be an awful lot of activity going on around a potential shutdown. Here to talk about that and a number of other leadership issues is my friend Robert Tobias. He's director of key executive leadership programs at American University and director of the Institute for the Study of Public Policy Implementation. And Bob, I'm glad to see you are able to mush your Iditarod sled through the 8 inches of snow that we got overnight and made it here just fine.
I thawed the dog meat and we were able to make it. Thank you.
I'm really happy to have you here because this, as we look outside here in our Northwest studios, there are actually patches of snow on the grass that have not melted yet. It's really unbelievable. So thanks to everybody in the weather forecasting business who caused all kinds of hubbub over this terrible storm that we got last night. It's great to have you here. It's nice to see you.
Thank you.
I have been thinking of you periodically as events have been unfolding in the Middle East. I know you're a student of the political process, not just in the United States, but all around the world. Maybe later on in the show we can talk about that a little bit, because just because I think it's interesting, not that it necessarily affects what federal managers do for a living. Something that does dramatically affect what federal managers do for a living is all of this talk of a shutdown that I alluded to. I want to talk about some specifics as we proceed, but overall, when you look at the broad strokes that are being painted on both sides of this issue, what's your takeaway from what you're seeing and hearing?
Well, it strikes me that one of the things that was learned from the last shutdown is that even though there seems to be a broad public response to the adverse response to the federal government, that when the federal government was shut down, there were many people who were stunned that what they depended upon and didn't associate with the federal government was in fact delivered by the federal government. Mm-hmm. They became very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result of that, the Republicans were blamed for the shutdown. And I think the lesson learned is both parties now are trying to position themselves to blame the other should a shutdown occur.
As we try to cut through that blame game and decide, it's not my interest to decide who is or isn't at fault if it indeed ever does happen. I'm not really, I don't think the likelihood of it's very high at this point anyway, for all of the discussion about it. The fact of the matter is there are still agencies that are taking efforts. We have a report on federalnewsradio.com about the Social Security Administration making those provisions. You and I were talking before we went on the air that this is causing a little bit of heartburn at agencies, I imagine, because somebody who works at SSA sees that report, says, I keep hearing nobody wants the government to be shut down, and yet it appears that the leadership at my agency is preparing for exactly that. They're coming into the office, they're asking questions, and I don't know that the leadership knows any more than you and I know from following this stuff. That's got to create a difficult work environment.
I agree with that. I think it would be folly for the administration not to prepare for a shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they said, well, it's never going to occur, therefore I'm not going to plan for it, and it did occur, they would be properly excoriated.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be planning for a potential shutdown. And I think there's planning starting at the top, starting at OMB, and I think every agency is also planning what actions they would take should a shutdown occur, because many agencies are in fact involved with the public on a daily basis. So what does that mean if the service they provide is no longer available? So I think they have to plan.
Mm-hmm. The Office of Management and Budget has told us just a few moments ago that they are updating contingency plans for a shutdown as they have done since 1980. How we got here, we're in a CR situation again. Both parties have been doing CRs now since it seems like right after the Civil War. It's been forever since an actual budget bill has been passed before the fiscal year actually began. if we're thinking about, say we get a deal, there's no shutdown, but we're looking at a continuing resolution affecting the rest of this year. Again, managers are finding themselves in a situation of not knowing what that's going to look like. What's your advice for somebody who's trying to just figure out how I'm going to work with my people through the rest of this uncertain period, whatever the results are?
Well, I think that, if we take the assumption as true that uncertainty breeds anxiety, and anxiety is really an enemy of increased efficiency. We have all of that in the federal workplace mm-hmm. today because agencies are planning right now for contingencies of a 2008 budget, a 2009 budget, a 2010 budget. All plans are on hold. All expenditures are on hold. All creativity and innovation are on hold. The workplace is really in the trenches. And when people are in the trenches, in the survival mode, there's no excitement, there's no enthusiasm, there's no one's looking forward. That's a very bad place to be if you're interested in improving performance.
Mm-hmm. Which is actually where I wanted to go next, is that's the kind of thing that's being layered onto all of this, is the idea that we're starting to learn more about the performance management agenda that the administration has, small letters, of course, not capital letters. And Jeff Zients is out there more, Shelley Metzenbaum talking more about exactly what agencies are going to be expected to do and how they're going to be expected to do it. At the same time, that there's no foreseeable peace when it comes to where the money's going to come from or what kind of infrastructure is going to be available to be able to execute that. Is it realistic, do you think, to expect that performance will change much with those question marks surrounding it?
I think it's very hard. I mean, if I'm looking to survive as an agency in terms of the money that I'm budgeted, it's very hard for me to plan for the future
mm-hmm.
because planning for the future requires change. It requires rethinking what I do now, thinking about what I'm going to do in the future. If I don't have any certainty about what the future looks like, it's very hard for me to plan something new for an uncertain future.
Mm-hmm. Another element of uncertainty for the workforce is just current events, what's going on in states like Wisconsin, Indiana, New Jersey, and I want to talk about that a little bit. I know you've been following those events, and we'll discuss that and what that lessons that we might learn about how things are working in the federal government when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Bob Tobias of American University, my guest, and our conversation continues in a moment.
CSC's Maryland Intelligence Unit and Eagle Alliance are growing and have immediate opportunities for cleared IT professionals. Attend our two-day career event for on-site interviews on either Friday, February 25th from 3 to 7 or Saturday, February 26th from 8 to noon at the Maryland Intelligence Center, 7231 Parkway Drive, Hanover. For more, visit us at csc.com/careersus and click on the Career Events tab. That's csc.com/careersus. CSC is a Fortune Magazine Top 5 Admired Company and an equal opportunity employer.
Don't miss the first annual Backgammon Beating Cancer Tourney, Saturday, February 26th, to benefit the wellness community, providers of free programs of emotional support, education, and hope for people with cancer and their loved ones. Beginners to experts are welcome. For more information, call David Ogden at 301-717-7166. For more information about the wellness community of Greater Washington, call 301-493-5002. All programs at the wellness community are provided free of charge.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or, in my case, green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Profile America, Tuesday, February 22nd. Land that would become one of the nation's largest states was acquired by the U.S. on this date in 1819 when Secretary of State John Quincy Adams signed the Florida Purchase Treaty. This called for Spain to cede the area to the young United States, in return for which the U.S. assumed $5 million in claims by U.S. citizens against Spain. Florida became the 27th state in 1845 with a population of about 55,000. The 2010 census showed Florida is now home to 18.8 million, making it the fourth most populous state. With the number of residents continuing to grow, Florida is projected to pass New York's population in the next few years to become the nation's third largest state. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
The Dorebeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorebeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorebeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorebeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Robert Tobias of American University is my guest for the hour. We're talking about all kinds of issues that are affecting the federal workforce in the wake of shutdowns and so on. And one of the things that I think is probably, Bob, in the back of people's minds at the federal level, maybe not forefront right now because of all the other challenges people are dealing with, but there's an ongoing dialogue in the states, the crucibles of democracy, so-called, about the role of unions in the public sector. And the loudest of those conversations is happening in Wisconsin. The governor of Wisconsin has been working to get a law passed, which he can do whenever the state Senate is reconvened. That would take away the rights of collective bargaining for everything other than pay, if I'm correct. Am I correct on that?
Everything other than pay, but the right to bargain pay would be capped at increase in the cost of living.
So it would be a pretty tight squeeze on collective bargaining for public employees in the state of Wisconsin. And we have more details on that at federalnewsradio.com. Governor Christie in New Jersey has been engaged since he took over that state about a year and a half ago in a battle against the teachers unions in particular. I find that dynamic a little interesting because New Jersey financially is in as bad or worse shape than the state of Wisconsin. Governor Christie's been focused primarily on the teachers union and hasn't really seemed to be that worried about trying to do battle with the other public sector unions in that state. What I think is important to take out of this and what I want to get your thoughts on is none of that looks likely to happen. It doesn't look like it's spreading to a majority of the states in the union. Nobody's talking about that kind of a conversation at the federal level. But it's got to be in the minds of people like your successor, Colleen Kelly, NTEU, folks at the other unions that represent federal employees. It's got to be in the backs of their minds to be prepared, as we were talking about, being prepared for a shutdown in the event that happens. And so I'm curious, as you follow these events, what you see happening and what connections you might draw.
Well, I think the federal sector is uniquely positioned to deal with the issues that are being raised in New Jersey and in Wisconsin. And I say that because President Obama issued an executive order calling for labor management collaboration. And further, that the focus of this labor management collaboration is to increase agency performance. And further, that they measure the results of their work and publicly report the results of their work. Now, if this all happens, and I believe it will, by September of this year, there will be hard data, quantitative data on the role of unions and their members are playing in increasing the performance of the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
That will be different than anywhere else in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think play an incredibly positive role in how the public views federal employees.
Yeah. You and I were talking off the air, and I'm not going to tell the whole story that I told, but there's it, right now that data seems to be only and exclusively anecdotal. And the stories that are told about the successes and the value that's added, you used that term off the air, and I think it's a great one, the value that's added by employees who are represented by collective bargaining is not really – there's not really a way to tell the story other than kind of one-by-one, word-of-mouth basis. Who's – maybe not whose job is it to tell that story – but who could do it in a way that would let taxpayers know the argument that Governor Walker's making in Wisconsin, and that in the case of the teachers union that Governor Christie is making, is not that the rank and file is bad. And Governor Christie's been particularly adamant about the idea that he likes teachers and it's the structure that he's not in favor of. So telling that story, I think, would be pretty powerful. And yet, even in the situation in Wisconsin, we're not hearing much from the leadership there saying, hey, wait a minute, this is the value that you're getting. This is the reason why you don't want volunteer firefighters. This is the reason why you don't want weekend warriors doing your being sheriff's deputies, as we had in some parts of the country many years ago, before those became professional positions. What do we think has taken so long?
Well, I don't think that there are many unions in the non-federal public sector who are really focused on gathering hard data about the value that they add.
Mm-hmm.
There is a great deal of anecdotal evidence, and if you speak to those who deal with a terrific teacher or who deal with any government service and say, gee, I really got great service today. They don't say, well, why, how did that happen? Great service happens because of great employees working with very good managers, creating a process that delivers great service. Only in the federal sector is there a focus on gathering real data. Not qualitative data, but quantitative data that when I give it to you, Francis, you'll look at that and say, all right, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
I invested $100 and I got 110 back.
Mm-hmm.
Or I got 125 back, or I got 150 back. And then you will be convinced unequivocally of the value added, mm-hmm, of the people who participated in the process.
It's a standard cost analysis to demonstrate return on investment. It's the same as every other industry does. And it's interesting to me that so far it doesn't appear that the states have been equipped to do that. And I bet there are a whole lot of unions in states around the country that are going to be calling Colleen Kelly and John Gage and their teams and the others, other unions, and saying, how can we generate some of this information so that when the next time we go to the bargaining table or the next time that we have a showdown with a governor, we can say, this is what we got. Having that data at the federal level, does that make you confident or maybe, feel a little less apprehensive that something like we're seeing, even if the attitude changed here in Washington politically, something like that's not very likely to happen at the federal level?
Well, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful because if this data proves what I believe it will prove, then it's not about ideology. Do I support unions or do I not support unions? It's I support a collaborative process between federal employees and their unions and the management of agencies because it improves performance. It has nothing to do with ideology. It has only to do with performance results.
And it strikes me that that gets back to the core of exactly what the labor movement was all about from the very beginning, which is a group of employees getting together and choosing somebody to make their case to management to explain why we're important, why we're adding value to the organization. Do you think I have that?
I think that's right.
All right. Bob Tobias, my guest from American University. He's on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
NBC News Radio, I'm Peter Alexander. Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi remains defiant. In a speech on Libyan TV a short time ago, he said he will fight on to his last drop of blood. Here, Gaddafi describes protesters through an interpreter as a small group of rats and mercenaries.
Who are taking drugs. They are going on the police from here and there like the rats.
A Christian mission has ended in tragedy. Four Americans were killed by pirates, their yacht hijacked off the coast of Somalia. NBC's Jim Nikolashevsky says a Navy vessel responded to gunfire on board and found all the captives dead when they arrived.
In all, 13 pirates were taken into custody aboard that yacht.
Four pirates were killed. And in New Zealand, the country's second largest city is in ruins after a 6.3 magnitude earthquake. That powerful quake rocked Christchurch around midday, killing at least 65 people. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Peter Alexander, NBC News Radio.
Getting across town to a job interview is stressful enough without being late. But the GPS on my cell phone guides me right where I need to be with no problems along the way. I want the same thing when I do my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step, and calculations are guaranteed 100% accurate, so I know it's done right, which helps me reach my maximum refund, guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Accurate calculation and maximum refund money-back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
Good news, ladies. Ugly brown spots on your skin might feel like they're the end of the world, but they're not. You can fade those brown spots from view with Dr. Perry's Night Skin Cream. New customers can try Night Skin Free. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. Try Night Skin Free. Call 1-800-509-4152. Pay only shipping and handling. One per household. Call for your free Night Skin. Call 1-800-509-4152. That's 1-800-509-4152.
Join Jim Fleisig on March 1st at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month will be a Department of Homeland Security CIO Roundtable, live from the 2011 AFSEA Homeland Security Conference. Jim's guests will be from DHS, NPPD, TSA, and CIS. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum, Tuesday, March 1st, 12 noon, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and on federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by the AFSEA Homeland Security Conference and Solution Series.
Are you a woman between the ages of 35 and 60 with noticeable fine lines and wrinkles? If you answered yes, we're looking for you. We are currently seeking women to try an instant skin-firming serum called Instant Effect. As part of this opportunity, we will send you a free trial of the product, and you may have the chance to appear in a national advertising campaign. To take advantage of this unique opportunity, please call 1-800-500-0365 in the next 10 minutes. Instant Effect is a breakthrough beauty discovery that tightens skin on contact and takes years off your appearance. Simply smooth a lightweight serum on your wrinkles and fine lines and watch as they disappear from view in less than 90 seconds. If you're interested in seeing how young you can look in as little as 90 seconds risk-free, you must call in the next 10 minutes. Instant Effect is now available at Ulta stores, but for this exclusive free radio offer, you must call 1-800-500-0365. Hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. 1-800-500-0365.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award. Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
On Tuesday, the prestigious $500,000 Draper Prize, engineering's highest honor, will be awarded for invention of a process called directed evolution. Through evolution, nature has created biochemicals exquisitely designed for their roles in life processes.
I wanted to build new versions of these things that wouldn't do natural jobs, but instead would help me solve human problems.
Francis Arnold of Caltech is an inventor of directed evolution.
You can optimize biological systems for all sorts of human applications, from baking to laundry detergents to drugs and drug delivery.
She tweaks the genetic blueprints of natural proteins and sees if the change creates a desired function.
I'll collect the ones I like and I'll throw the other ones away.
The process is then repeated in a fine-tuning similar to breeding, but with molecules instead of animals. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Robert Tobias of American University, and we're talking about all kinds of management challenges that you are facing in the federal government with the shutdown talks, the continuing resolution. And Bob, even if the government doesn't shut down, and even if the continuing resolution situation is solved in a way that allows agencies to get back to some semblance of normalcy, we're still looking at shrinking budgets or at least freezing budgets over the next foreseeable future. And so thinking about it, changing the way you think about management because of the financial realities seems to me to be really critical. What are some of the people that you're talking to trying to do to help their teams understand that times are going to be different, even once we get past these little bumps in the road that we have right now, looking out for as long as we can see, things are going to operate a little bit differently?
Well, I think I think it's a very significant challenge, because even if the Obama suggestion of freezing budgets over the next 5 years were to come to pass, at the end of the fifth year, you're talking about an absolute decline in the budget of somewhere between 12% and 15% or 16%. Because none of the any pay increases that come from promotions would be covered. None of the increased costs from rent would be covered. None of the increased costs from paper or travel or any of the other costs that agencies incur. So the only way you can absorb those increased costs is by reducing the number of employees on the rolls. As you decrease the number of employees, rarely do agencies cut services. So the squeeze is, how do I deliver the same level of service or more with a declining workforce? And I think one mistake that an awful lot of managers make is by not naming the problem, by not saying, this is going to be hard. This is going to be tough. How are we going to do it? Because we are pledged to, deliver service. How are we going to do it? So managers skate around that issue. Political appointees skate around that issue as though all they need do is work harder, as opposed to look at the way service is actually delivered and change the processes of delivery, as opposed to just assume people can suck it up. Federal employees have been sucking it up for a long time. So unless the problem is named and new approaches are designed, developed, and implemented, I think we'll see declining services and even more complaining about federal employees and their failure to deliver.
A lot of folks have talked about the idea that as we look at performance of programs and so on, the conversation should not be we're going to cut X percent across agencies or whatever. It should be, let's find what doesn't work, or let's decide what government maybe is doing that it shouldn't be doing. And the president's talked about that, and people all over the administration, Congress, and so on. Do you think there's a role for a manager in the further down, not just at the C level necessarily, to say, all right, here's what we do, Mr. or Miss person two or three levels above me. This is what my group does. And so which of these functions going forward with X number of fewer people would you like us to not do? What should we focus on? What do you think, what's your view of what's mission critical and what can we let go? It seems to me that that's the conversation that managers are not encouraged to have with their bosses and their bosses' bosses.
Well, one of the things that the students in the key executive MPA program do is an action learning project where they focus on a difficult problem in their agency and try to address it. One of the students last semester focused exactly on the problem you described. My agency, she said, does 10 things. We can afford to do 7. Which 3 should we cut? So they worked actually for 3 or 4 months to decide on what criteria they would use to evaluate the 10 programs, and then got agreement that these were the 3 programs that ought cut. They ought cut because they didn't have the funds. And then they talked to their oversight committees in Congress who said, no, you're not. Keep doing the 10.
Yeah. And yet the money's not there to do all 10.
That's
so
correct.
How do you explain that to Congress? You're not giving me the money, and understood. Okay, let's say we all agree we don't have the money to do those. So is it better to do the 10 in a mediocre way, or is it better to do the 7 in a high level of performance way? That's the question that has to come. That has to go to Congress, I suppose.
Well, if you're diabolical, you want the agencies to do 10, to not do it well, and then complain about the fact that they didn't do it well. I mean, if you're if you are the purser, as Congress is, mm-hmm. It seems to me you are responsible and ought to be held accountable for making those kinds of decisions. Congress has not done it, notwithstanding those who call on Congress to make those decisions. They don't do it.
Interesting conversation, as always, with Robert Tobias of American University, my guest for the hour on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and we'll continue in a moment.
Become an extraordinary leader through the Key Executive Leadership Masters of Public Administration program at American University. Taught by faculty at the top-ranked School of Public Affairs, the Key MPA program is designed for working professionals and offers weekend classes to fit your schedule. Learn more at an information session on March 1st. To RSVP, visit spa.american.edu/key.
Homeland Security doesn't just happen. It takes vigilance, intelligence, and experience to see and solve a problem long before it happens. TASC has done this for America's intelligence and defense communities for more than 40 years. As a proven and trusted partner in our nation's security, TASC has the most sophisticated IT solutions and tailored program management expertise to help DHS protect Americans. Homeland Security by design. That's TASC. Learn more at TASC.com.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
The GAO's Jeanette Franzel at the AGA conference last week.
The condition of federal finances is really dire right now. We've got a very acute short-term problem where we're trying to deal with the recent economic recession, and at the same time we have a long-term issue with structural programs that we just can't sustain, and we don't want to damage the short-term economic recovery.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Robert Tobias of American University. And you are, in addition to all of the other things that you are, as being an expert on management and federal government and so on, you're a scholar of foreign affairs. And we talked last time you were here about your trip to the European Union with some of your students to see how the European Union does some of the same functions that we do here in the United States. I imagine you're following what's going on in the Middle East. It's fascinating to see these. They seem almost spontaneous because of some of the elements of social media that are included. What do you think of what you're seeing on TV and hearing?
Well, I think that the common denominator across the Middle East seems to be a huge population of 18 to 32, 35-year-olds. A high unemployment rate among those folks, and at the same time, an increasing cost of basic staple goods. So you have young people, many of whom have education, who are unemployed, who are frustrated, who can't get on with their life, and now have to pay more for food and clothing. Mm-hmm. So I consider that to be a very volatile situation. And I think it's a very narrow tipping point between feeling helpless and feeling empowered.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've been feeling helpless and angry and I see a way forward that someone else has successfully followed, then I'm only too eager to try it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, notwithstanding the fact that the people in charge are different in different countries across the Middle East, it seems to me that desire to change from helplessness to being empowered is critical to what's fueling what's happening across the Middle East.
You had an interesting observation about one of the things that's making people uncomfortable in as we watch what's unfolding in these countries. The catchphrase almost now out of Egypt is, we don't want the Muslim Brotherhood to take over. I have not seen... There are some folks that are still unsure and uncomfortable with the idea that the military leadership in Egypt, the role that they're playing. But beyond that, I have not seen anyone who's either capable or interested in stepping forward, at least yet, and trying to drive that country toward an Iran-type model, where you have essentially another dictator instead of Mubarak. It's the same thing, different name. The groups that have been protesting there, and the groups that have been trying to drive change there are primarily interested in some kind of a citizen participatory government. And the observation that you made about the composition of what that government would look like vis-a-vis the Muslim Brotherhoods of the world and so on, I think was pretty informative.
Well, I think that, care has to be taken to how, if they choose a parliamentary system, how the representatives in that parliamentary system are chosen. If we have winner take all, then a minority group of 20 or 30% can take all and run the country for the other 80%. Whereas if the parliamentary system is created where you're allowing, in the way the districts are designed, you're allowing a broad representation, then what that forces is coalitions and no one group controlling. And in an emergent democracy, it seems to me that that's the construction that's really necessary to allow people to practice governance, because they haven't had an experience practicing governance.
Mm-hmm. The thread that seems to be running through the countries, not just in the Middle East, we're starting to hear and read about this happening other places where there are oppressive governments, seems to be, if they can do it, why can't we? And that's the element of it that seems to be driven through social media, where people are able to learn about things where in previous years, no information got into a particular country and a government was able to really isolate itself and its people from the outside world. That's not possible really now, no matter what a government tries to do. Even in China, seeing some very small pockets of not resistance exactly. It's not like anybody's storming the gates, but there are people who are saying, wait a minute, we want the same things that we're seeing other people have. Are there lessons that we can learn here in an environment that's totally different structurally, but that we can learn from this discontent from that's happening and it's manifesting itself in other countries?
Well, I think that some of the discontent that's manifested here is the feeling of not being included, not being involved, and that my thoughts, my concerns, my fears are not given credence by my elected representatives. And I think part of that is structural, in the way the congressional districts are designed. They've been designed over time to maintain the status quo as opposed to allow for a real mix. So the status quo currently is designing safe seats for Democrats and safe seats for Republicans. So it's possible in many districts to ignore those with whom you disagree. So if I can ignore them, I'm not talking to them. I'm not taking them into account. I'm not giving them a voice. It's certainly, under those circumstances, they feel alienated. They feel ignored. They feel that they're not included because they're not. So I think that although we are often critical of other governments, we practice some of the same non-inclusive practices that we see in other countries.
Bob Tobias of American University is my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Just a few minutes left before the Dorbeck Insider starts at 3 this afternoon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
FLIR Systems has a singular focus on providing thermal imaging night vision systems for search and rescue, surveillance, and force protection across the globe. We proudly support the men and women who serve, defend, and protect by providing leading-edge technology to enhance mission success. Today, customers trust in FLIR Systems' thermal imaging products and rely on our responsive support worldwide. Visit FLIR.com/GS for more details. FLIR Systems, extraordinary vision for extraordinary heroes.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. Few, the proud, the Marines.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
On Tuesday, the prestigious $500,000 Draper Prize, engineering's highest honor, will be awarded for invention of a process called directed evolution. Through evolution, nature has created biochemicals exquisitely designed for their roles in life processes.
I wanted to build new versions of these things that wouldn't do natural jobs, but instead would help me solve human problems.
Francis Arnold of Caltech is an inventor of directed evolution.
You can optimize biological systems for all sorts of human applications, from baking to laundry detergents to drugs and drug delivery.
She tweaks the genetic blueprints of natural proteins and sees if the change creates a desired function.
I'll collect the ones I like and I'll throw the other ones away.
The process is then repeated in a fine-tuning similar to breeding, but with molecules instead of animals. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
HCMF Federal Recruitment and Talent Management Strategy Day is a one-day training conference to be held Wednesday, May 4th, 2011 in Washington, D.C. The conference will focus on new opportunities for bringing in top talent to the federal government, such as marketing and brand strategies, investing in employee development, and more. Keynotes will be presented by OPM Director John Barry, as well as presentations from seven other Chief Human Capital Officers. For more information, please visit HCMFRecruitmentDay.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Robert Tobias. He's director of the Institute for the Study of Public Policy Implementation and director of key executive leadership programs at American University. And we just have a couple of minutes left. As people are trying to noodle through all this uncertainty, what should leaders in government be thinking about as they're trying to think about leading in uncertain times like this?
Well, I think it's easy to hunker down and get into that survival mode. And I think that leaders have a responsibility to look forward. And I think they have a responsibility to help those they lead to get out of the trenches and looking forward so that they can start thinking about accomplishing agency goals and objectives as opposed to living in the fear that uncertainty creates.
It is a time, as you talk, use the term hunkering down. I think that's very apropos. I would imagine, though, that it's probably a more important time than ever to think about not just how we're going to make it through this stretch, but what we're going to do when we get beyond that and continue to deal with budget challenges, with personnel shortfalls, and so on.
I don't think that that budget shortfalls are going to go away soon. I don't think public demand to increase performance is going to go away. And the failure to think about these issues now is only going to increase the crisis later.
It's always great to have you come in, and the time runs away from me much too quickly. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Robert Tobias of American University on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You can hear our conversation posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Best of the Dorbeck Insider up next, and I'm back between 1 and 3 tomorrow on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening.